What is the pattern across the lineage of my soul? What are the themes of this life? And why did I come back? Who are the people that I incarnate with most? The between lives is when we go in between and we get this horizontal view across the lineage of our soul to understand characteristics that we carry between lifetimes as well.
Peter Smith, welcome to Passion Harvest. I'm so excited to have you back on the show today.
And it's great to be back too, Louisa. I had such a great conversation with you last time, and it's great to have another one.
You're amazing and a wealth of information, and I love all that you do. I mean, so many questions, but I'd love to start with life between lives, a big topic, but again, it's your show today.
Well, it's hard to know where to start, and we did talk a little bit about this last time, but if somebody missed that conversation, let me perhaps offer a definition. And then I would really love to talk about what's happened in Life Between Lives in recent times since we last spoke. And some of this stuff's a little bit hot off the press. So let me first of all define Life Between Lives as in my own context and my own realm of Life Between Lives. It's the work of Dr. Michael Newton. He wrote best-selling books, Journey of Souls, Destiny of Souls. He mapped over a long period of time thousands upon thousands of clients who went into an in-between state between incarnations. He managed to map the afterlife into those segments and what happens between those incarnations and some of the enlightening questions that we can ask people in that state is what is the pattern across the lineage of my soul? What are the themes of this life and why did I come back? Who are the people that I incarnate with most? So, whilst past life has been around for a long time, reincarnation is well accepted in most parts of the world. The between lives is when we go in between and we get this horizontal view across the lineage of our soul to understand characteristics that we carry between lifetimes as well. So, a beautiful field of work. Michael's original work was 7,000 case studies. The Michael Newton Institute and our people around the world, 220 in 40 countries, 25 languages. We've reproduced his original research 10 times over now. So this is a field of work that is well established and has brought insight, enlightenment to many people in many places all around the globe. I
It's
sound a
so
bit like a brochure.
no, it's so interesting, and I'm thinking in my humanist here because we want to visualize and see everything. But so what happens when our physical body dies? What happens?
You know, this came up on our Facebook page for Michael Newton Institute just yesterday. And somebody said, well, you know, the soul's there and it goes back and it leaves the human part behind and we feel abandoned and all of that. And I'm doing my best to offer into that conversation that it's just so not like that. And to understand the dynamic between the immortal essence of who we are and our human self is something that brings peace. Let me explain. Our soul chooses us out of 8 billion options on this planet. Now, the energy and the decision behind that is just staggering. And I really believe that that's the greatest act of unconditional love that we'll ever experience, is that our immortal essence would choose to be us, to have that oneness relationship period of our life. Now, when the physical husk is left behind, if I can call our beautiful disguise a physical husk, everything goes back and it integrates. And sometimes, as a way to get the message across, I use an analogy. And everyone loves the library in our work. They go to the library and they look stuff up. And I say, well, the soul is like a library. And each of our lives is like a book in that library. And the book's never lost. The book's always in the library. And you can go to other books in the library as well, under the watchful eye of a skilled facilitator. But without the books, the library would have no reason for being. And the library always holds the books. So for me, this beautiful interweave between our eternal self and our human self is a loving combination of one purpose, one lifetime, coming here to make a difference, particularly in these times. And it's something that is that just brings peace when you know that you will never truly cease to exist. You will always exist, but the shape and form in which you do will just continue.
So a few more questions on this. So when our physical body dies, I mean, we incarnate into this humanness, whatever you want to shell, with lessons to work on and soul paths. Is that correct?
Yeah, we come with an element of pre-life planning. We may choose an infrastructure for a life. We may be born into a certain culture, a certain family. We may have certain predestined events. We may have certain contracts that we put in place for our learning. So we build that infrastructure, but how we respond to those contracts and whether we stay in that culture, how we react into that infrastructure and how it serves us and how we work with it is our free will. So people say, is it predestined or is it free will? Which one is it? The answer to that is it's both. We set up the learning system with all of those parameters. We drop into it and we use our free will to do that learning. And when we leave this lifetime and go back, those are the parts that we debrief. Those are the pieces that we seek to understand that allows us to understand, well, what did I get out of that life as Pete or Louisa or whatever it might be? You know, how did I go? And we don't debrief the infrastructure because we set that up from there before we came. We usually debrief our free will and how we went with that.
And how what about karma? How does that come into play?
I have a slightly different view of karma than what some people do. And, you know, rather than an Old Testament eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, karma for me is another chance. And it's another opportunity to be able to learn another lesson. And, you know, if we said, well, I've been struggling with this for a number of lifetimes, and I've had clients say that to me over the years. You know, I've been struggling with this person for five lifetimes. Okay, and they might call that karma or they might call that another chance, but by bringing that to light within this life, it says, wow, it's really time I got over this thing. And they might take their power back from that person, or they may forgive them, they may learn to love them in a different way. Because that's a really big contract that souls would take five lifetimes to work through something together. There's got to be love under that.
Yes, love, suffering, all those elements there. They can be challenging in our humanness. What's your
oh, absolutely.
Sorry. What's your advice for the audience to follow their most aligned soul path or lessons in this life?
That's a great question, Louisa, because, you know, people talk about the path of least resistance. If something's not flowing in your way, then there will be a reason behind it. You'll either be offered what's in the way, and that'll be right there in your line of sight, or it'll be a place that you're not meant to be. And to understand that and to determine, you know, is this my true path or not? You know, if you keep coming up against blockages, is this some blockages that you've created, perhaps even from early days in this life? Where's that resistance coming from? Or are you off track? Because our souls, I believe, gently guide us and lead us to the book, the conversation, whatever it might be, that aligns us with our reason for being here. The best advice I can offer the audience is to listen. What is this trying to teach me? What is it that is, you know, holding me back? What is this restlessness that I'm struggling with? That inner and deeper listening is something that is directly related to the path of your soul.
Listening, instead of making instant decisions and all those sort of things, listen and, yes, patience.
Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky enough to live close to the ocean. And if something's not working, I go and throw myself into the ocean and float around for a while and then just let go and then just thoughts come, ideas come. Some people do meditation, some people walk in nature, some people do yoga. Whatever it might be that stills the mind, allows the wisdom to come from the deeper realms of who we are. You know, we're in a life and a lifestyle that is incredibly busy, incredibly distracting. We're completely bombarded by information all the time, EMF waves, Wi-Fis, all of the technology and the noise around us energetically sometimes drowns out the soul. I feel it's important for everybody to take that time out to listen very deeply, to still the mind and let the things flow that will offer wisdom from within.
Thank you. Beautifully said. Last time we spoke, and it's absolutely fascinating, I'd love to move on to parallel lives. I remember last time you gave some incredible explanations of it. So what are parallel lives?
Well, it depends on whether we're talking about parallel universes or parallel lives, because let me give you one definition and move to the other so we cover it all. I refer to past lives as parallel lives because I don't believe in time and space as a linear function. I believe it's a construct for learning. And I believe that we have this sequential type of life so that things are in an ordered way, which we can track our progress as we grow and learn. But when it comes to past lives, and this is interesting, Louisa, because I remember many, many years ago when I was first doing past life work, and you'd take somebody back and they'd be in the Colosseum and you'd be saying, wow, this guy's a gladiator and all that. And they'd be in battle and people have sort of got their eyes shut and they're moving around in the chair as they, you know, revivicating some of this past experience. And it came to my mind, this is happening now. This guy's not sitting there saying, oh, you know, 2,000 years ago, this guy was chasing me around the Colosseum with a big sword. They're not saying that. What they're saying is that I can feel a thrust go into my chest. He's standing over me. I know the end is coming. I think this is it. And they're talking in the present tense. So for me, all of these things are still happening in parallel. So if we work within that life, we release some of the difficulty of it, we get him away from his body and back into spirit, whatever it might be, I feel we're doing something to bring peace to a piece of information that is lodged within the collective unconscious. Whenever we do regression type work, I believe that we're cleaning up what's happened in other lifetimes and bringing peace to souls as they perhaps cross over out of these past lifetimes. So for me, parallel lives, past lives don't really exist. It's more parallel for me. If we're talking about the alternate realities that create parallel worlds, parallel universes, based on Hugh Everett's original paper in 1957, he talked about how the collapse of the wave function didn't really happen. From the observer effect, everything went on into ever-increasing versions of the multiverse. I find that incredibly fascinating. And we've been working with that for some time now at the Institute for Quantum Consciousness. And what we've found is that when somebody takes one of those forks in the road and they go in two directions, that because we've come from the same subatomic particles originally, that they can still be contacted, because they're quantumly entangled from these particles that split and went two directions. And of course, the soul, which is limitless, goes in two directions as well. So what I love about the alternate realities, as I call them, what I love about the alternate realities is they are great avenues of learning as well. The soul continues to split and to move through these realities in order to learn. But we can make contact. So within a particular timeline, we can contact another. We can find out what happened to them and we can exchange information. And one of the ways we facilitate that is to take the client's awareness outside of time and space. So you're between timelines where you can have those conversations.
It's absolutely fascinating. So based on the choices we make, I'm just giving an example, there's multiple versions of Louisa or Peter based on the choices in this lifetime.
Yep, absolutely.
So interesting. I mean, yes. And I it's my belief as well that everything's happening now. Do you Do you mind giving the audience an example of potentially a client that you've worked with other dimensional
Examples
lives?
examples are so necessary, and they're fantastic because they bring things to life. And look, I'm happy. I was me and my partner and a few others. We were the original crash test dummies for this work many years ago. And I think I'll tell a personal story because that's very powerful for me, and hopefully it'll bring some insight for our listeners. I left corporate life 20 years ago to pursue this work. And I was one of those people that were trapped in that other path. And I was being drawn in a new direction. And I started off as a weekend hypnotherapist before I got away from hypnotherapy into the quantum stuff. But I wanted to track another version of me that never left corporate life. And I was in contact with another reality where I observed myself on a train on my way into the corporate job, and had a huge event on a train with my heart. Stopped, I fell over, and I watched myself pass away from a heart attack on a train going to work because my heart was closed, my heart was broken, I wasn't doing what I was meant to do here, and I just gave up. I remember hanging around, observing that reality, seeing my children get the news. Watching my own funeral, and what that offered me more than anything, because we only undertake this work to get the insights, Louisa, of course. It has to add value to us in the here and now of where we're based. I found that as even though I'd dropped a big corporate salary and I'd moved into a field of work that was remunerated very differently, let me say, I found out that rather than be less a provider, I was actually still around in this timeline to be able to love and nurture and support my children. So for me, it justified, because I'd always, did I make the right decision? If there's, to take a new direction at 40 odd years of age, is this the right thing for my family? Am I doing the right thing? The justification came that day when I thought, yeah, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't still be here.
Amazing. And I know you speak a lot about healing trauma through all these modalities. What effect does it have on us, our body and our soul?
I think there's a lot of things happening in the collective trauma of humanity at the moment, and I believe there is an overall theme of us releasing the past as a collective that's going to allow humanity to move into a new state of consciousness. And I think a lot of people are cleaning up the past. For me, I've done a lot of healing trauma over the years, but these days I like to feel that we transcend the trauma. And if I look at the work that we do and that I have other people doing now and that we're teaching, we talk about how rather than going to a trancey type state, we take people into a level of awareness that was closer to an out-of-body experience. When you move up and you view that trauma from this elevated view, this more expanded presence, you say, what's the greater purpose behind that? What is it trying to teach me? Why have I created this as a learning system? And what does it truly mean for me? And we're getting answers from the expanded self that transcend it. When there's trauma and difficulty, you can work to heal it, or you can transcend it in a way that brings enlightenment to it. And it dissolves into an event that is simply recorded as part of our history and doesn't hold the charge of trauma. Now, we're doing some things to clear family lines. Ancestral healing is everywhere these days. A lot of people are doing that work. People are re releasing the past in any one of a number of different ways. The beauty of that, and what we're often deliberately doing in our work, is that we're saying, okay, that's cleared. Now we're going to ask that gently drift through the multiverse into all other realities where that needs to heal as well. Now, the whole universe, of course, is holographic, and the large and the small are the same. And when we do something in one small corner of the universe, it ripples out. But when we deliberately create an intent behind it as well, and we send that healing to other versions of ourselves, we multiply the shift in the collective unconscious in a way that is enormous. So whatever intention we set, the universe responds. But for me, again, a hint or a tip for our people who are listening, it's okay. Go and look for the things that are holding you back and release them, because you're actually clearing the consciousness of humanity. If you do ancestral work and you set your ancestors free, that's cleaning up the collective unconscious that allows humanity to ascend to a new state of being. So this is important work that we're doing, and we're seeing these themes regularly.
Yes, and alleviating what we call suffering. So when we, on some dimension, heal ourselves, we're healing the collective consciousness.
Absolutely, because we're part of it. You know, we are our own library card into the collective unconscious, because by incarnating into humanity, that decision to incarnate here makes you part of it. So this is part of us. This is who we are. We are part of that collective consciousness, and all we need to do is to understand that we are part of something greater than ourselves, and that all of that is available to us as healing tools, resources, all of that. It's all there waiting for us. All we need to do is expand beyond this humanity-trapped consciousness that we have been told, this is it, this is, look in the mirror, that's who you are, there's nothing else. You know, once we understand that that's not really the model of who we are, that we are metaphysical beings in the spiritual multiverse, once we know that, so much more is available to us to bring change into our lives.
And on that basis, then when we come to this incarnation and learn and grow and learn the lessons, it also affects the learning of the collective consciousness.
Absolutely. You know, you hear that old saying, we're all in this together, which was bandied about for a long time. But, you know, there's something about the oneness of humanity. And those of us who are ready to move into a new level of awareness can bring others with us. If we start to have the conversations and we have the courage to bring enthusiasm to other people. You know, are you happy with the world the way it is? No, not really. Well, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to look at things differently? Because the mindsets that we've carried in time have brought us into a position where our main systems are failing, whether they be political, whether they be financial, whether they be medical or educational. You know, those four systems are in distress because there's so much happening in them that is dragging them down. We're rife with materialism and that sort of thing. But once we understand that there's more to us than the creation of wealth and the pursuit of power, and that we are more powerful together and that we can take this planet into a new consciousness, once we all come to that conclusion, it's just going to happen almost overnight because we'll have critical mass.
You, I'm backtracking here. You mentioned before about creating your reality. Do we create our reality?
I believe we do. I mean, we see snippets of this everywhere. The observer effect is well known. Double slit experiment. I'm sure a lot of people listening have heard of that, of how we observe something and we affect them. No, we've heard about the power of intention. Even in business life, people do goal setting and they seem to turn up. So there's something about how we create certain energy through our intention. And, you know, when we do journeys with people, we do that at the start and we say, what is the intention that we want from this journey together? And we call that the rocket fuel. And the higher the potential of that rocket fuel, the further we seem to go. And it may be to transcend the things that are in your way. It may be to set yourself free to be the person you came here to be. Could be, and that's their examples of the rocket fuel. So everything that we then take the client on the journey that brings their awareness out of their body, it fits with that intention because we've sent an invitation out to the universe that this is where we want to go. These are the journeys that we want to take, and this is what we're seeking. And the universe responds to our intention. If we truly set our heart and our mind on something, then it seems to lead us in a path that brings that to manifestation. So for me, all the possibilities are out there, and through our own energy field and our invitation into that limitlessness, we draw them to us because there's a vibrational frequency match. You know, if I want to go to Italy for a holiday, okay, I put my whole consciousness into that, and all of a sudden I see a brochure on Italy and I get it, and then an idea comes, and then some money came that wasn't expected, and that covers an airfare, and all of a sudden within 12 months or a year, you know, you're sitting on the Amalfi Coast and you're thinking, wow, how did I get here? And it's all because you created the intention, you asked the universe for it, and it emerged.
Just a last question on, well, past lives, multiple lives that are all happening now. You've obviously done a lot of regressions yourself for past lives. Have you, if they're all happening now, what about future lives?
Great question. You know, what we've found, me and people like me, and we have those conversations and conferences and that sort of thing, what we generally find is that because we are in the linear construct, because we have to pretend to be in linear time because we're in the simulation, future lives are interesting, but they are a possibility. And that may depend on decisions that we make and universes that we create along the way towards it. What we've got to be careful of doing is robbing people of their free will. Let's say, for example, you go to a psychic and a psychic says you're, like they said to my daughter one time, you're going to meet a man and you're going to fall in love and you're going to live in Sydney and have three children. And my family was living in Melbourne at the time. So she said, I actually want to go and work in London. So she did. She's been in London for 5 years and she met an Englishman. And they're together now, and they're coming back to Australia to live, and they're not going to be in Sydney, coming back to Melbourne. So she could have listened to the psychic, and she could have said, okay, I've got to look for a guy. It's got to be Sydney-based. I'm going to have three kids, so I need to save some money. So she could make that her self-fulfilling prophecy and move towards that future state of being. Now, if we look at a future life and we say, well, that's the one that we're going to be in, so I'll now move everything towards that in terms of the lineage of my soul, it cuts out all of the other possibilities along the way. Sometimes it's helpful to know that this is a possibility and it may or not be there, but we find that when we try to do future lives, they're a little bit less, they feel less certain, they're a little bit more nebulous, because we're just pulling one piece out of a multiverse that could go in any possible direction under our own free will. So what I've found, and with people that I talk to, is that, you know, we're not as enrolled in that part of it. We're more enrolled in the here and now and what we can bring into this space that may help us with this particular lifetime that we're in.
Thanks for clarifying that. A big congratulations on your book, The Transcendence of Celeste Kelly. What's it about for the audience, if they haven't read it yet?
You know, my last book, Quantum Consciousness, was launched through Llewellyn in 2018, and I sat down to write the next one. And I thought, what's the next one going to be? I'm just drawn to write. And I tried for months to sit down and write the next nonfiction. And my dear partner said to me at one point, she said, well, you did those Facebook posts about those other reality type things and they were a little bit fictional. Why don't you sit down and write a novel? And it just, bang, that was it. It dropped in and it just lined me up, like I was talking about before, lining up the energy. So I sat down, I said, well, if I wanted to tell a story, that brought in all of our work, brought in 20 years of metaphysical research, linkages into quantum physics, what would it be? So The Transcendence of Celeste Kelly is about a quantum physicist who's doing a doctorate and she's looking for information. She's trying to interweave the many worlds interpretation, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, and M theory, which is sort of a super string theory. She's trying to find the overlap between them to find the other dimensions that they talk about in string theory and the multiverse. Anyway, she has these incredible adventures into consciousness and eventually becomes more of a consciousness type researcher. Of course, her father died in mysterious circumstances because he was researching free energy. So she's got that in the background that she's dealing with that, and she discovers aspects of his work. She finds ways in which she can mine the multiverse to make the world a better place and try and collapse multiple timelines into a future Earth that is of a higher vibration. So if you like her, it tracks her journey through the discoveries that take her from science, having to let go of science, having to move further into consciousness, and she discovers a lot about herself. I can't say much more. I'll probably do too many spoiler alerts.
Okay, but it's a great book, and I will leave a link below in the show notes. Thank you. I loved also your analogy of how you were wanting to write a book, a nonfiction book, and it just wasn't working. And then something changed. Well, your partner suggested it, but it just flowed. That's almost like the analogy for life. Instead of forcing things sometimes that just aren't working.
And look, when you break the blockage, and when I listen to Melina, because she sometimes picks up the pieces that I miss, and we all need a partner like that, Louisa. It just flowed. And my way of writing a book is I put, you know, big pieces of flip chart paper up on a wall and I write a plan. What's the storyline? And I head down the hall and back up the other side with the storyline. And look, at the end of the day, you end up with something that turns up as a book. And for me, it's an incredible journey. And again, the validation that, you know, I believe books come through people rather than from people. And I believe that there was a message out there that needed to be told, a story that was brewing. And I was the lucky person that it was downloaded into. Somebody has to sit at the keyboard, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember reading back over parts of the book and saying, wow, that sounds really good. I don't remember writing that. And I think that's... you know, that's the type of books that when you're in the flow, that's what you see.
I love that. Where's the best place for people to find you? I also will leave a link in the show notes, but you may as well tell people where's the best place.
Yeah, Institute for Quantum Consciousness is .com is our major organization with our people in a number of different countries who are doing our work now. My own site is quantumconsciousness.com.au for Australia. There's lots of interviews. There's podcasts. There's, you know, lots of information, articles, etc. on those websites that are helpful for people. One thing I'd like to recommend is the Transcendence Adventure, which is on the Institute for Quantum Consciousness.com. That's a free meditation series that's based on artwork like the one behind me that was shot in a virgin rainforest, 9 different journeys, and that was put together to help people get through some of the difficulties of lockdowns and all of that some years back. And I've had, you know, wonderful feedback on that people have been able to expand and heal and to move into space, and that's all free. So it's open to anybody.
Wonderful. Well, Peter, I've loved having you on the show. What else would, or is there anything else you'd like to share with the Passion Harvest audience that I haven't asked you today?
Well, I just know in my heart it's going to be okay. A lot of people are saying, you know, the world's in turmoil and it's going to crash and burn and our financial systems are going to fold and the elections in America next year are going to be big and then something will happen after that. I just have this inner knowing, this feeling that we're going to come through this and out the other side and we're going to be much stronger as humanity. I feel that, you know, a lot of people are talking down humanity, but I want to talk it up because I think within all of us is a deep sense of compassion and love that comes from being human. I think sometimes that remains hidden, but I think that's a little part of all of us. And I think that we're going to move through these times that seem difficult and we're going to make the world a better place, we will need new systems. We will need a different type of leadership, but I believe it's just around the corner.
Very comforting, and that, and a beautiful way to end the show. Peter, thank you so much for being on Passion Harvest. Really,
thanks,
really
Lisa.
fascinating.
Great to be here again. Thank you.
Bye.